Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hello, Smart Money Tree Podcast listeners. Welcome to this week's show. My name is Kirk Chisholm, and I will be your host. Today, we are talking with Rachel Richards. How are you doing today, Rachel?
Hey, Kirk. I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. So today we're going to be talking about multiple different things, but I'm glad we had a chance to get you on. Rachel is one of our younger guests, but she's had a lot of success in her life, and I really wanted to share that with our listeners here. Rachel, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
So I am a lot of things. I'm a best-selling author of 2 books on finance. I'm a real estate investor, and I have almost 40 rental units. I'm a former financial advisor. But what people find most interesting about me is that last year, at the age of 27, I quit my job and retired, and I'm now living off over $15,000 per month in passive income.
How are you able to do all that? Do you have like a twin, or you're making me feel lazy? So can you talk about like some of the reasons you've been able to get your success at such a large degree?
Yeah, I often wish I could clone myself, but we're not there yet. But, you know, I do have my husband to help. You know, he's my business partner, so he's been there with me along the way. But our journey started in 2017, and I think a lot of people find that surprising because that year we were both working full-time. We didn't have any passive income. So we were able to get from there to here in under 3 years, basically. It took a lot of work. We were definitely working 80-hour weeks at times, definitely getting burnt out. But the sacrifice has been well worth it because now we have the freedom to work when, where, and if we want.
What would you say are some of the secrets of your success? Because that's still a lot.
Yeah. And a lot of people ask me too, you know, wow, you own so many rental units. Are you a trust fund baby? And so no, I'm not a trust fund baby. I've actually never made 6 figures in a career or in a job ever in my life. A lot of people think wealth has to do with income, and it really doesn't. You know, someone making $300,000 a year and spending $300,000 a year, that person's not wealthy, they're broke. But then you look at somebody making 40 grand and saving half of that, that person's going to get a lot further along. And I was the latter type of person. You know, my first job after college, I was making $32,000, but I was saving 50% of my income. So I was living very, very frugally. And that's really one of the keys to success is focusing on your spending. You know, finding ways to increase your income, but also decrease your expenses. Because if you can grow that gap, that's the leverage that you need to become wealthy. And that's what I was really good at doing at a young age. So I would say that's one of the secrets and how I went from there to here so quickly. And then another thing, you know, with the real estate investing, people ask, well, where did you come up with the money for your first down payment? I paid my way through school all on my own. So I graduated without debt. My husband used his military benefits to graduate without debt. So we had that going for us, and that was huge. That's why we were able to save so much of our income early on. And then, you know, we were investing in a pretty low cost of living area. All of our rental properties are in Louisville, Kentucky. So the housing market's pretty reasonable. Our first duplex cost $100,000. And my husband and I each saved 10 grand each to put in to get to our down payment of 20 grand. So that's how we bought the first one. But the real secret, Kirk, and how I was able to scale the real estate specifically is that at the time I had my real estate license. And I never had it for having clients or for helping other people buy and sell houses. I had it only for myself to invest in properties. So I would represent myself as the buyer's agent on the deal. Every time we bought a property, we would totally deplete our savings. But then I would be getting a commission check back for thousands of dollars. And we would use that to jumpstart our savings for the next down payment.
Wow, that's brilliant. You represented yourself and you got half the commission. That's awesome.
It's not a ton, but it's more than nothing. On a $100,000 deal, I was getting maybe $2,500. But, you know, on a $400,000 deal, because that's a couple of our buildings were that much, I would get back 10 grand. And that would get us a lot further ahead in terms of saving for the next one. So we were able to scale quickly.
And how many properties do you have now? You said you have 40 units?
It's 39 units, but it's 6 buildings. So 39 doors.
I love the way you're going about it. I think it's really great. But even that, like, how are you able to get to leverage that so quickly? Because if you're saving, say, $20,000 a year, you can only buy so many buildings. So how are you able to scale that up so quickly?
Well, we were saving a lot more than that, even with our incomes. And at the time, my husband wasn't making six figures, but we were saving 50% of our income. And I forget how much we were making back then. But let's say we were making 100 grand combined. We were saving 50 grand a year just from that. Then I was getting commission checks back and I was doing two deals a year at the time. That could be another 10, 15 grand. And then any cash flow we were making on each property, we were totally saving and reinvesting that as well.
You pretty much just poured everything right back into buying more real estate as a way to generate cash flow.
Yes.
That's great. Now, were you managing it yourself? Because obviously that takes a piece out of the profit center is when you have a property manager. So were you doing it yourself or were you hiring outside people to do it?
When we first started, we self-managed. And I think it's smart for anyone to self-manage when they're first starting out, because not only does it save you money, but you're really learning the ins and outs of what it takes to manage tenants and schedule maintenance and do all those important things. And that really sets you up for success later when you do hire a property manager, because you have an understanding of how they should be operating. So I think it's a great way to start out and learn. We were self-managing until we got to about 26 units, I think. And then by that point, it was a time constraint because we were still working full time and managing the properties on the weekends. And then I was writing my books in the evening. So we just couldn't do it anymore. So at that point, we hired a property manager.
You've been able to find a good one? Because I know that a lot of people complain about the quality of the property manager they have.
I mentioned that, you know, my single biggest mistake in real estate, and that's what it was the way we hired one of our property managers. It's definitely one of the hardest things to do, but I'll share with you what we did, because at one point, we had this a couple people that were working for us, and they were doing things like cleaning the common areas in our properties and the lawn care and helping us a little bit with the tenants. They were very hardworking. It was a husband and wife couple. They went above and beyond. We really trusted them. So when it came time to hire a property manager, we thought to ourselves, well, what if we hired these two individuals as employees and we could save money that way and be a little more hands-on with how we want them to do things? So that's what we decided to do. And this is our big mistake. So it started out really great and they did a great job. And then about 6 months in, things went downhill. My husband went to our properties one weekend to collect the money from the lockbox on site. And he noticed there was a lot of rent missing. And it wasn't just a normal tenant paying late. This was a significant amount of money. So of course, we're calling them, what's going on? Can't get a hold of them. It turns out that that weekend, they stole $6,000 of rent money from us. And we found out later that they went on drugs. So it's probably something where they had a history with that and feeling, you know, this, I don't know, power or authority to manage our properties. Something happened and things just went downhill. So I can laugh about it now, but at the time it was very painful and embarrassing. But the moral of the story is this: you don't want to be cheap when it comes to your property manager. You don't want to be cheap. And that was our mistake, is we went with the cheap option. And sometimes I'm so frugal, you know, frugality at an extreme is also a flaw. You can't be too frugal either. And you can't cut corners here. So really what you want to do when you're hiring a property manager is to go with a qualified, licensed, insured, bonded property management company. Because if we had done that and one of their employees had done that to us, they would have been liable for the damages, not us. So that is my biggest mistake and my biggest piece of advice.
Finding a good quality PM is really hard. It comes up all the time in conversations. How do I find somebody good? You know, it's tough. But, you know, it sounds like you're making, the mistakes you're making are, you're learning from them, which I think is really important. So when you kind of looked at this way back, did you just kind of fall into real estate, or did you decide like, this is the path I'm going to take to become financially wealthy and independent? Or how did you kind of look at that kind of process?
I decided, I think back in high school, actually, that I wanted to invest in real estate. And it's because I read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was my first introduction to real estate investing. And I was hooked. So I was reading everything I could after that. I started out as a financial advisor. And then I took a couple stints in the real estate industry, which at the time I kept thinking, man, I'm really overqualified for this. I shouldn't be doing this. But in hindsight, I'm really grateful for those jobs because I learned a lot about real estate investing and transactions, you know, how to close on a property. So it's funny how in hindsight, only in hindsight, we can connect the dots sometimes. But yeah, my initial plan actually was totally different. I wanted to purchase a single family home every year for 15 years, all on 15-year mortgages. So I figured if I started in my early 20s, I'd be retired in my mid-30s once those mortgages started getting paid off. I'd be really making a lot of cash flow by then. So that was my initial goal. Of course, things ended up happening a lot more quickly than that.
Are you looking to continue that growth, or have you decided that this is enough? Because I think that's another important question is like, what is enough, or how are you looking at that?
A lot of people are surprised that I am not continuing to acquire property. But the thing about real estate investing, while I love it and I'm passionate about it for what it does for me, I've never been so passionate that I wanted to create this huge empire and have hundreds of units and doors. For me, it's $10,000 per month in profit. And once we got there, which we got there, I think at the end of 2018, we stopped acquiring properties. So at this point, I don't think we're going to be growing our empire. I think if anything, we might start looking at selling some of our buildings to transition into something more passive.
If you're looking at selling some of your properties, you know, what's next for you if you're looking for things more stable?
Yeah, I think if anything, we would transition that money into portfolio income. You know, a lot of people know portfolio income as the most common way to create passive income, but it tends to be pretty unattainable because you have to have such a large amount of capital to invest in the stock market to make any meaningful income. So for me, okay, I'll transition into that later when I do have that wealth accumulated. But right now, I am still extremely passionate about teaching young people about finance. So I'm focused on my books, launching online courses. I'm just finding, but that doesn't mean I'm not working, right? I use the words retired and financially independent interchangeably. So now the income I'm making isn't dependent on my time. I get to do the things that I love.
That's really why you become financially independent. You get your time back. You can spend time doing things that you want to do.
I think that's something we don't think about enough. You know, I think a lot of us are so focused on the getting away from something we don't like. You know, we want to quit our job. We want to be free and do all the things we love to do. I think sometimes we focus so much on that, that we don't think about what are we going towards. Because a lot of people have trouble with this sudden loss of purpose and this loss of fulfillment. So you definitely don't want to just focus on quitting your job without knowing how you're going to spend your time in the future.
We see that a lot with people that retire at a normal retirement age. They have that loss of purpose. In your experience, I mean, you do a lot of teaching of younger people about these concepts and a lot of things that you've learned. You're an entrepreneur in the way that you've kind of gone about creating your income streams. Any things that you've kind of come across that you'd say, well, you know, I totally disagree with this based on my experience? Like, what kind of things have you learned along the way?
There's so many. I'll touch on a couple. You know, one of them, I think there's this advice given to entrepreneurs to say yes to every opportunity. And I agree with that. I do. I agree with it to a point. I think when you're starting out and you're hustling, you have to take advantage of every opportunity that comes your way for sure. But if you continue to follow that advice past a point, you will get yourself into a lot of trouble. And this is something that happened to me because I was saying yes to every request that came my way, even when I was starting to see some success and my books were taking off and I was still working full time. So I hardly had any time to do anything. And the problem with that is that if you say yes to everybody, your calendar is going to fill up with everyone else's priorities but your own. So it really takes a mental mindset shift to learn that saying no can actually be a lot more powerful for your business. Because everything you say no to opens up the door for a bigger yes in the future. I think someone once told me, if it's not an enthusiastic hell yeah, then it should be a no.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's wise, but it's very hard for people to do when they're in the mix of it, right? You're trying to survive or you're trying to, you know, grow, and saying no to opportunities can be really hard for a lot of people. From your experience, like, where do you draw that line?
Yeah. And it's something I still struggle with because I think I just used to be operating I was sort of frantic. It was just a frenzy. I was so busy all the time and a request would come in and I would just deal with it and not even think about it. But now I just have had to learn to really slow down, be a lot more intentional and realize, oh, this is an option. You know, I don't have to respond to this or give free advice to somebody just because they're asking for it, right? No one's entitled to my time or to my advice for free. And it's hard though, because a lot of us genuinely, you know, I genuinely want to help people. I want to make an impact and do as much as I can. But what I've realized is that I could spend all day giving free advice and responding to messages and emails, but that's actually going to detract from me making an impact in a bigger way. So it is a trade-off. I think if you can think about it that way, you can learn to say no a little bit better.
What are kind of next steps for you in your path? Because it sounds like you're making a transition right now, or at least starting to. What's the next steps in your trajectory?
I've always been such an ambitious driver, and I'm always focused on the next goal and achieving the next thing. And, you know, that has caused anxiety and a lot of stress in the past. So now that I've quit my job, we've moved out to Colorado, my only goal right now is to really slow down and relax and enjoy things and realize I don't always have to be working towards the next goal, right? Like, it's okay to have fun, Rachel. It's okay to not try to monetize everything. I can have a hobby that I do just for pleasure. So that's pretty much my goal. You know, in a bigger picture, I definitely want to keep focusing on my books, maybe writing another finance book, offering another online course, and just continuing to help young people.
If you had to give a young person like a few pieces of advice, like what would be some of the top pieces of advice you'd give them starting out at a young age?
The biggest piece of advice for anyone starting out is to start tracking your expenses. And it's so simple, yet it is so eye-opening. Okay, the first month my husband and I did this, and this is super embarrassing, Kirk. I feel like I shouldn't admit this because I'm supposed to be a finance guru. But the first month, yeah, that's right. The first month we did this, we realized we were spending over $900 just on groceries. Groceries, like not even including restaurants, for two people. I mean, that is bigger than some people's mortgage payment or some people's rent payment. So it was very eye-opening. Once you start tracking your expenses, it will be very clear where to cut back and you'll naturally want to put a budget into place from there. There's a quote by Dave Ramsey that I love, and he says, "A budget is simply telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went."
I think that's a great quote. I will comment on the on the grocery part. I think you don't have kids and you don't live in Boston, because that's actually a low number around here.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a struggle.
The other part of it too, though, is money has a purpose. It's really just, it's saved up effort. If you really look at money, it's not a thing. It's not good or bad. It's just basically your saved up effort, your work. If you want to spend it on groceries, then that's where you should spend it. But I agree with you that you have to track it. That's really important. But I think it's also important probably to spend it where you want to spend it, right? You want to have joy in your life rather than just be a working machine, right?
For sure. I think it comes down to just being conscientious and intentional about your spending, you know, not just spending and having no idea how much you're spending. But if food is something you really value or travel is something you really value, as long as you're living within your means, but, you know, by all means, yeah, spend a lot more in that category than other people might. It just comes down to what do you value and how are you going to make conscious, intentional choices about your money?
I think intentional being the key word, I have to say. That is so important, and people kind of overlook the intentionality of what they're doing. But yeah, setting your intentions is one of the easier ways to get through some of the struggles, because things like budgeting is hard. Any other tricks or tips that you can give our audience that they can take away from this and, you know, start using today?
I would love to just talk about passive income, because the way I define passive income is that it's money that is earned with little to no ongoing effort. Now, is it a get-rich-quick scheme? Absolutely not. It does take time or money to create passive income. But I truly think that there's two avenues to retirement. There's what most people do, which is to try to save up a huge nest egg, a huge sum of money, so that they can eventually retire and live off of that until for the rest of their life. I've always seen that as unattainable. You know, there's statistics now that say that millennials will need to accumulate at least $2 million by age 65 in order to retire. Now, I don't know about you, Kirk, but like, I don't know many multimillionaires, right? So to think that all of us will need to become multimillionaires to retire, it just sounds intimidating. So that's why I love this concept of passive income, because I think it's a lot more attainable. Once your passive income exceeds your living expenses, you're retired, you're financially independent. And because of passive income, because I started creating it in 2017, you know, now 3 years later, I am financially independent. So I truly think that anyone at any age and on any income can use passive income to achieve financial independence.
I think that's a really important point for the audience to take away from this is there's two paths, which is you can save up a bunch of money, which some people do, whether it's through work or success in their investing. And then there's the passive income approach, which I don't say it's easier. It's just a different way to approach it. And I think it's something that we're definitely not taught in school. Like, I don't know about you. I didn't learn that in school. Like, hey, passive income and you could retire is, no, everyone says, oh, you need X amount of money. You need $1 million. I mean, all the books, like Millionaire Next Door, I mean, it's all about saving up a huge amount of money slowly and diligently. What you're talking about is kind of a different lens to look at the world and one that we're not really taught in very many places.
Absolutely. And I agree. I mean, we are in a financial education crisis. At no point in our lives are we taught how to manage our money. And then we're left as young adults to try to figure it out all on our own. So no wonder so many of us have these feelings of guilt and shame and embarrassment when it comes to our money. But it's not anyone's fault that we weren't given the resources we need to succeed. And, you know, that's why I do what I do, because I think it's disappointing that we're not taught in our education systems. And I'm here to try to clear the air.
You mentioned Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but what other books were really influential either now or in the past as you've kind of grown?
Oh yeah, I love reading. It's my vice. I mean, I definitely have a reading problem, but a couple of my favorites, you already mentioned Millionaire Next Door. That was really eye-opening for me at a young age to learn how most truly wealthy people live so modestly. You know, they drive used cars. They live in normal houses. They don't live in mansions. So I loved that one. Another one of my favorites is The Millionaire Fast Lane by MJ DeMarco. It is so, so good. It really opened my eyes and it really helps you shift your mindset from consumer to producer. So I think it's a great book for entrepreneurs. And then I would say another one is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, who really, when you think about that book, it kind of has some similar ideas to passive income. You know, it's all about outsourcing, freeing up your time. So I love anything that Tim Ferriss writes.
I would agree with that. I think I have all of his books, even his encyclopedic books, which you're only supposed to use for reference. I think I've read the whole thing.
Yeah, like Tools of Titans. Oh my gosh, incredible book.
Yeah, he's a great writer and pitches podcast too, which is quite good over time. So
yeah,
we really enjoyed having you on the show, Rachel. I think this is really helpful. We definitely have a number of younger listeners who can take a lot away from this. I wish I had gotten a lot of this advice in my younger years. I think it would have helped. But I think a lot of us, as you said, aren't taught this in school. So maybe you can give us some kind of final thoughts or takeaways from this interview.
I would just say, you know, don't be discouraged. I think a lot of people think it's too late for them, or I don't have enough money to create passive income or to invest in real estate. And I would just encourage you, it's not too late for you, right? If I could do this in 3 years, then a 56-year-old could do it in 3 years and still retire early if they wanted to. And as for not having enough money, you don't have to have money necessarily to create passive income. You have to have either time or money. But there are a ton of options out there for those of us that don't have a ton of money to invest. So, you know, just do your research. We're lucky to live in this age, the internet age, where there's so much information for free. You know, grab some books and just get started. I'll leave everyone with this. It's my favorite quote by Zig Ziglar. And he said, you don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great.
Where can people find more about you?
Yeah, so both of my books, Money Honey and Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement, are available on Amazon in ebook, paperback, and audiobook. You can follow me on Instagram at Money Honey Rachel. And last, Kirk, what I'd love to do for your listeners, if anyone wants to download my passive income starter kit for free, you can go to moneyhoneyrachel.com/bonus.
So that was a great interview with Rachel Richards. It definitely got my butt off the couch, made me feel really lazy just by listening to her and all that she's accomplished in the amount of time that she's been alive compared to what I've done. I'm feeling very small right now. But we do want to bring on some of our panelists to help me feel a little bit better. So we have our very own Barbara Friedberg. How are you doing today, Barb?
Hi, Kirk. I don't know if I can fit that bill. Yeah, she pretty much intimidated me too. 3 years, very impressive. I thought it was a great interview.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it as well. And we also have our very own Megan Gorman.
Yeah, hey, it's good to chat with you guys today. And I have to say, I'm 44 and I'm still loving working. So I get it's impressive she's 27 and retired, but I love working. So it was sort of an interesting interview to listen to.
Yeah, and I want to dig into that because that kind of gets, I think, to the core of what really makes sense to talk about. Barb, what were your thoughts on the interview? What were your kind of initial takeaways or thoughts?
Well, one of the takeaways is a theme that I've lived by through my whole life, which is live way beneath your means, not just a little beneath your means. If you can afford to, it gives your life a lot of flexibility, and it also allows you the freedom to build up wealth. And I just want to give an example, because when my husband and I were starting out, my husband was in graduate school and he went to a very expensive graduate school and I was working full time. And at the time, I contributed the maximum amount allowable by law to my 401k at my job. Now, we could barely afford to live on what was left. And fortunately, we had some savings. And there were months we had to dip into our savings just to live. But decades later, the amount of growth that we've had in our assets through investing has just smoothed out the financial concerns that we could have had over life.
So glad you brought that up. I'm sorry, Kirk.
No, go ahead, Megan.
It's interesting because I'm going through something personally with my own finances. And I think you bring up a great point, which is really having control over your expenses can help propel you ahead. But it also allows you to maybe embrace better situations as they come down the line. And I bring this up because when I look at my finances with my husband, you know, in the scheme of things, we're very conservative. As Rachel brought up in the interview, you know, we don't spend as much as we bring home. You know, we focus on saving. And we've also really focused on not having a lot of debt. And what we're finding now is we can afford to take more risk on certain things that we think will enhance our life going forward. But if we didn't have the controllables on the expenses, like it sounds like Barb, you and your husband did out of the gate, and I'm sure Kirk, you and your wife do the same, we wouldn't have some of the opportunities available to us now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point because most people out there, they live up to their means. You're making $100,000 and you get a raise and it's 120. Ooh, great. Now I can go join this club or I can go, you know, go on more vacations. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But at the same point, we have this natural desire to live within the bounds of our means. But if you're not saving first, which I think is really the big key, is, you know, save first before you do everything else. Saving is an expense. You have to treat it as an expense, as a mandatory expense that is every single month you are going to save X. And it's just like a mortgage payment. You just make sure you save. Because if you don't, you're going to find ways to spend it. You know, you get extra money in your bank account. Oh, great. Maybe we should go on another vacation or we should go buy a boat or whatever it is. But as Barb is saying, living below your means is really important. And I think it's really hard. Our whole society lives way above our means. And part of the reason why everyone has credit card debt and they really have challenges with debt because they're living way above their means, in part because all their friends are doing it. The FOMO of missing out and keeping up with the Joneses. You know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to have a good life, but if you're not in charge of your expenses, then you're really kind of putting yourself over the barrel, you know, for future later in life.
I wanted to chime in another issue on that point, which is habit formation. I was really, really lucky, again, to be brought up with parents that had the habit of saving and had the habit of living below their means. And so I feel blessed that this was ingrained in me. And I know a lot of people don't have that experience. Their parents had a lot of debt and they didn't model this. So for those of you that are in that boat, it's kind of on you that you have to figure out if this is what you want. If you want to be financially secure, do you want to make a commitment to develop the habits, like Kirk said, of saving first and investing first? Because it is a habit and it can be hard in the beginning. But as you'll find with any habit that you've developed, whatever it is, the more you practice it, the easier it is. And over time, you will want less. So you may look around and see other people having extravagances. But if you have the habit of knowing that you want to build up wealth for your future, you won't be lured into thinking of, oh my gosh, I have to have the designer clothes. I have to eat at the 3-star restaurants. And I have to drive the new $50,000 car.
And if you want those things, then that's great. But it's an exchange, right? You have to figure out what's a priority. I mean, you look at somebody like Rachel, who obviously is an extremely hardworking woman and, you know, was successful because of that. That's not easy. And I think a lot of us look at people who have financial freedom and who have the desired lifestyle we want, and we think, oh, we want that. But the real question is it a want to have or is it a need to have? Because if you just want to have it, it's probably going to be too hard and you probably get discouraged and you go back to your own habits, as Barb was saying. But if you need to have it, then you'll push through. I mean, Rachel's obviously a very driven woman and I envy her because I think that she's accomplished so much at a young age and I wish I had done that much at a young age. It's something that she really wanted and it's something that she went after and she achieved. And she still works hard, even though she's quote unquote retired. I mean, she's still working hard because in my opinion, that's the kind of person she is. And I think it's great. You know, having a goal in mind at the outset is really an important part of this. But one thing I do want to get into is kind of what retirement means, because I think we all kind of have this vision of retirement. And I know in my experience, people have a vision of retirement that may not be suitable to them. So Barb, when you kind of look at retirement, like what does that mean to you?
Kirk, I'm in a panic about retirement. So I don't even know if I should discuss this, but I think retirement means the opportunity to choose your own lifestyle, to do what you want. And it is a choice to make it, design it in a way that is good for you, having the financial resources to live how you want to live. And that takes a lot of planning, but it comes with a tremendous amount of anxiety because purpose is really important throughout our lives. And many of us get a lot of purpose from the work we do. And if we stop working, there can be a void. And I want to share a story about a very successful friend of my mom's. And he worked very hard. He worked at IBM. And then he wanted to get out of the rat race. So he bought a business and built it up himself to a very, very successful level. And then he retired, you know, maybe sometime in his 70s. And he went into a deep, deep depression because his entire self-worth was built around his job. So retirement is not something for most of us, and some of us have to retire, and that's a different story. But retirement for most of us is not the time where we go, okay, goodbye 9-to-5, hello freedom. It really requires a lot of thought and a lot of planning, just like your career does.
That's a great point, Barb. And we actually go through this with a lot of our clients. We call it retirement lifestyle design, which is really going through this process of transition. Because if you really think about it, the transition from working to retiring is extremely stressful for everybody. Let me kind of paint the picture for some of you who are maybe not in this boat yet. You know, when you work for 40 plus years, your job in working is to provide for your family, to save for retirement, professional achievement, personal gratification, whatever it is for you. Everybody's different, but you have a purpose in life. For 40 plus years, you have that singular purpose. And then all of a sudden, you have to flip a switch and that purpose goes away. You no longer have that purpose. You go from basically working hard to not working, going from saving and, you know, providing, saving for retirement, to spending. Those are really big challenges for people psychologically. And you're basically doing a 180 degree turn on that. And you're doing it right away. You're not easing into it. It's not a simple thing. You know, they talk about things that cause the most amount of stress for people. This one is. And a lot of people don't last very long after retirement because they don't have that sense of purpose. The way I describe it is, you know, when you're working, you have a reason to get out of bed in the morning. When you retire, a lot of people lose that reason to get out of bed. And that takes a toll on you mentally, and the mental part feeds over into the physical part, and the health deteriorates. But the people that I've seen who are the most healthy and have the most vibrant retirement are people who are finding another path. They're finding another purpose in their life. And that purpose could change. But I think there's a real big concept around this that I don't hear anybody talk about, which is why we spend so much time with this with our clients, because it's such a big deal and no one is talking about it. So when you're getting ready to retire, you feel like you're freaking out and nobody can empathize with you, because if they're not retiring, they're not feeling it. It's a really big challenge. And maybe in a future episode, we can kind of go into this. But, you know, Megan, what does retirement mean for you? Because it's probably, you're at a different stage in your life.
So I'm in an interesting stage because I am married to someone who's 13 years older than me. And so, you know, I think I have to think about retirement a little bit differently. But, you know, because both my husband and I, we don't have children and we have always been very career focused, I think part of it is we don't ever really see ourselves retiring. We see ourselves shifting and continuing to do things that interest us and that we can be passionate about. I think the one shift we would like to make is not work at the level that we are working at today in the future. You know, I think the thing is, if you ask me, I will always be working. That's what retirement means to me, is the idea of always having something to get out of bed for, which is what you said, Kirk. But it's sort of shifting gears. And I think this goes to what Rachel said about passive income, in the sense that when I think about what I'm doing today, a lot of the saving I'm doing for retirement is to create, with my husband as well, is to create our core income stream for when we're retired and we're going to live off of. But what we've talked about is, as we shift gears, are there other income streams that we can layer on what we've built today? So for me, you know, from the writing, for him, consulting, you know, all of those different things are ways that we're going to have different income streams so that we can have this sort of multi-layered retirement. So I don't know if that answers your question the right way, but I never see myself saying, I'm retired, I'm done. I just think it's going to be like, I've ended that act of my career and I'm onto a new one.
I like the way you're presenting that, because that's kind of how I think about retirement as well, is more of a shift. I mean, I enjoy what I do. I don't see myself retiring, maybe working less. This, in many ways, I think maybe it's a X or generation thing, because I know the boomers, what they tend to do is they tend to work really hard their whole career and they can't shut it off. You know, and I see this a lot with boomers. They just can't shut it off. Like, they've been successful in life, but they just can't stop. And they can't accept retirement for what it is. They can't accept the fact that I've, quote unquote, made it, or I've reached my goal. You know, this concept, and I'm sure you see this too, Megan, what I've found is, no matter how much wealth people have, they always feel like, if I only had 30% more, I'd be okay. It doesn't matter if you're worth, you know, a billion or like 100,000. Oh, if I had 30% more, I'd be okay. I think it's a human nature thing where people always feel like they need more. And I get it. I mean, we're wired that way. But I think as you get into retirement, it's really hard to turn that off. And it's really hard to make the transition to say, all right, I'm here. Like, now what? I think it's a really important point. And retirement means something different for everybody. We don't need to fit the mold that our friends and family are doing in their lives. We actually call it phase two, because I think the word retirement is too negative or too depressing and it sends the wrong message. Call it phase two because it's really an opportunity. It's an opportunity to do whatever you want. I mean, Rachel's doing it at a young age. But basically, you're looking at it and saying, all right, I've met my financial goals. Now what? What do I want to do with my life? Kind of goes back to the quote of people living a life of quiet desperation. If you are, retirement's a path to seek what you really love to do. If you already love it, then the question is, well, now what? You know, and I think it's a really good question everybody should ask themselves. And even if you're younger, it's still something you should think about. It's not something you figure out 40 years from now. It's something you should think about now and work towards that, because it's much easier to reach a goal if you know where you're going than if you're just wandering aimlessly around. And then at the last minute, you're saying, all right, it's time to retire. How much money do I need? A little too late. So as we kind of wrap it up here in the interest of time, what are your final thoughts, Barb, on this? Things that you think the listeners should take away from this episode?
I think the summation is that we save and invest so that we have the flexibility within our lives to do what we want. And it doesn't mean that we're going to have a life free of problems or stressors. That's a given. Everyone has them, from the poorest of the poor to the wealthiest of the wealthy. The idea is just to accept the fact that, yeah, life's not easy, but you can make it better for yourself if you make the choices to save and invest and create a financial cushion for yourself. It's optimal if you can find work that you really like. That would be great. And also, I like the idea of both what Megan and Kirk said about then designing the future that you want. So I am Barbara Friedberg. You can find me at Barbara Friedberg Personal Finance and at Robo Advisor Pros. Thanks for having me on, Kirk.
Thanks for coming on, Barb. And Megan, what about you? Final thoughts you think the listeners should take away from this interview?
First of all, I want to say, next time I want to go first. Barb always says it the best, I got to say. How do I top that? No, but, you know, I think going back to something that Rachel said in the interview, she said, you know, just because someone has big income doesn't mean that they have wealth. And that is one of the things I see all the time in the space that I work in. So just because someone makes hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars a year, it doesn't mean they have anything saved. And I think it's really about discipline. For a large percentage of Americans, if there is discipline laid on from expenses on the income that's coming in, you can create the life that you want. But it's hard, and it's sacrifice. And it's sometimes hard for us in today's age to do that type of sacrifice. And that's why I think when I think back to how do I plan for myself, I'm always visualizing the renting an apartment in Rome for a summer, or, you know, traveling here and traveling there when I quote unquote retire or shift. And that's because that forces me to do the right thing today. So I'm Megan Gorman. You can find me at thewealthintersection.com or on Twitter at WealthIntersect. Thanks for having me on, Kirk.
Thanks for coming on, Megan. And also one thing I'd like to point out, Rachel mentioned a number of great books. A lot of guests recommend the same book. And, you know, one of those is the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, which seems to come up all the time. Having the right books to be inspired by is really important. And if you're not reading books about getting better, then that should be the first thing on your list. Because there's a lot of people who've had success who have, I think Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it's not about knowing the mechanics of what works and what doesn't work. It's about the mindset. And I think that's one thing that he does really well in that book. And there's a few others that she mentioned as well, which have a similar concept about getting the right mindset. And if you get the right mindset, the rest is just details. So that's it for this week. Thanks again for joining us on Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, wealth manager at Innovative Advisor Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on the show. So please remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also check out the show at moneytreepodcast.com. On our website, you'll have access to all our show notes, resources, and archive shows. Lastly, please leave a show rating and comment on the podcast app of your choice. Have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.